7:42, 45 degrees. Welcome to the morning show here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. Time for our Green Side Up program, brought to you by Green Acres. And we are joined by David and Wendy. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
And what a beautiful day it's going to be today. Kind of warm, too. So
yes.
Not bad.
It's a nice morning.
Yeah, it is. Not bad for perhaps, I don't know, maybe feeding some birds.
Yeah.
Like that, huh?
Yeah, that's a good lead into what I'm going to be talking about this morning, which is bird feeders and feeding birds. So I know, you know, this warmer weather has me thinking about spring and the plans for my garden, and birds are kind of getting out and about. So folks might be thinking of birds and maybe their bird feeders as well. So I know I talked a couple months ago when we were in the really cold weather time frame, when it was feeling more like winter, about winter bird feeding. And winter bird feeding is great because it provides birds with easy access to food when the food they find naturally is limited during the winter, because a lot of plants have died off and it's harder for them to find those seeds and fruit and insects that they feed on. And I have gotten a few questions about concerns of if you start feeding birds in the winter and then your bird feeder runs out because you're on vacation, for example, will that then harm those birds because they start to rely on that bird feeder? And while they do start to, you know that bird feeder's there and will visit it very often, research has found that if that bird feeder goes empty, birds can kind of just pick up and go back to finding those natural sources of food fairly quickly. So if you are thinking about putting a bird feeder out this spring, you may be wondering what type of bird feeder to put out, or maybe what type of bird seed to use. So bird feeders are broken down into categories, and that's because there's kind of three different categories of how birds feed. So we have some birds like sparrows, which are considered ground feeders, so they feed, you know, on the ground or close to the ground. So tabletop feeders are ideal if you're wanting to attract those types of birds. And every time I talk about tabletop feeders, I think of those bird feeders that sit on the ground and look like miniature picnic tables and are kind of cute to watch the birds on. And then we have cardinals and finches, which are considered shrub feeders. So of course they're just that little bit higher up than ground level. And then we have chickadees and woodpeckers that feed in trees. So they're kind of that higher level up in the treetops, so to speak. And for like the finches and the cardinals, tube feeders or hopper feeders are ideal for them. You can hang them up off the ground. And then woodpeckers and chickadees, of course, those feeders will work well for them. And then also the suet feeders. A lot of times you'll see recipes for how to make your own suet feeders. And that is bird seed, and usually it has lard or peanut butter or some fat substance in there to kind of cake it all together. And that's baked in a block sometimes. And the only thing you want to watch out with those is as the weather gets warmed up, sometimes that fat or that peanut butter, whatever you're using to hold that feed together, starts to get hot, and then it can smell a little bit or drip and make a little bit of a mess. So if you're wanting to attract different types of birds to your yard, the best way to do that is to kind of have a variety of feeders out there and to place them at different levels. And for spring, you know, the weather really starts to warm up and stay warm pretty consistently around May. So that's when, if you're looking to start attracting those birds in the spring and summer, having those feeders out then and ready to go works out the best. Now, in the spring and summer, there's a lot of natural food sources for birds available. So you might not see as many birds visit your feeders as you would in the winter, but you'll still see a variety of birds. And then when it comes to bird seed, so by far black oil sunflower seeds are the types of seed that are the most popular with birds and a variety of birds. So if you're wanting to get started, you can use black oil sunflower seeds or a bird feed mix. Most bird feed mixes have sunflower seeds in them. Millet is another popular option. And if you're wanting to attract a certain type of bird, you can look up what seeds that bird likes the best. Or I've noticed on bird seed bags, it will also list the seeds in that bag and the type of birds they attract. Another neat option that you could try during the summer is if you place grape jelly outside or orange slices. Those are great ways to attract orioles. And you can also put apples out as well to attract orioles and also robins and cardinals. And then, of course, as it gets warmer, hummingbirds are always a favorite to watch at the feeder. And hummingbirds are ones that they really do rely on that feeder because they have a very high need for that nutrients, for that sugar, and they don't travel as great of a distance as other birds.
So basically what I'm hearing is that the black oil sunflower seeds, they're kind of like the chocolate in the trail mix,
right? Yes.
They're the ones that most of the birds go after.
Yes.
And the rest is just kind of, it's there, we'll get it if we need to, but you know, that's the kind of the most popular.
Yes, that's the most popular. Like you said, that's kind of like the chocolate in the trail mix. I mean, some people go for the peanuts, some people go for the raisins, but you know, chocolate's always the safe bet to be the favorite. And it's kind of that same way with the black oil sunflower seeds.
This is very interesting because just buying a house, now we're trying to become bird people, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I didn't realize there were so many levels to not only on the ground, but you know, higher feeders as well, and even tabletops. So that's interesting.
Yeah, and if you hang them at different levels, that helps attract different types of birds. And then you can also get into different types of bird houses for the different types of birds you want to attract. And one other thing to consider when you're looking at placing bird feeders is to put them close to where birds will have shelter. So whether it's shelter from the wind and you're hanging it close to a tree or a building, so if it's windy, the wind won't blow that feeder around as much, or also shelter from predators, because birds do have a lot of predators. So if they're able to visit the feeder and then quickly get to shelter, whether that's a birdhouse or trees or shrubs, that helps attract them. The only little bit of a downside with feeding birds is bird feeders can also attract other critters like squirrels and raccoons that can get to be a little bit of a nuisance as well. But for squirrels, depending on the type of bird feeder and how you have them mounted, there are some different kind of at-home ways to try and prevent squirrels from getting into your feeders.
That's good news, because around my house we have too many nuts living there anyway, besides the squirrels. So we don't need any more of those natural critters, you know, coming to try to take the seed away. The hummingbird feeders, I do have a question about that, just because, you know, living in a house, my stepmom absolutely loves hummingbird, and so she will have them all over the house. Is there a specific place that we should place those hummingbird feeders where we can still see them, but where it's still safe for them?
Yeah, so I know hummingbird feeders, you know, everyone loves to watch them. So putting them in view of a window is always a really popular option. And with hummingbird feeders or any bird feeders, I would say, you know, like those, that's a great place to put them. Just put them farther out from the window. Sometimes when they're too close to the window, it can confuse the birds, and the birds will unfortunately run into the window.
And that's exactly why I was asking, just because I don't want to see those little birdies, you know, smack into the window. That wouldn't be good at all. So I understand why you want to be able to see them, but be able to place them far enough, you know, for safety's sake as well.
Yes.
So, okay. All right. Okay, so I'm the newbie around here. I got to make sure we talk to you after the news. Is that right, or do we talk to you for a couple minutes before?
Yeah, so I'm going to give you a little preview of what we're going to talk about.
Awesome.
Selecting herd sire. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. It's calving season on my place, so then we get to think about the next step, of course. Yeah. So we're going to talk about that. We do have a few programs coming up I wanted to mention. So on March 7th, I know it's a little bit early, but you can get it on your calendar, Animal Health Day in Independence. And then we have a nice long list of events on our website. So anybody looking for something, we've got the Women Managing the Farm Conference coming up in Manhattan next week. Finances on the Farm, that's something that's ongoing. It's an online class, so anybody interested in that can do that anytime, as well as Risk Management on the Farm. And then the State Line Crop Conference next week on the 15th. And the COMA Beef Cattle Conference also next week. Next week's a big week right there. And then tonight is a radon program in Pittsburgh. So lots of things going on. Check out our website or our social media feeds for things going on.
Absolutely. All right. So we'll be back here in just a little bit. We'll talk more. Shouldn't that be its own season? Calving season? I mean, you know, spring, summer, winter,
yes.
Calving season pretty much. That's what I thought.
I would promote that.
I believe it. I mean, it was a big time. My grandpa loved calving season. Yeah, absolutely did. So, all right. So we'll talk more here in just a little bit after the news and Fox News here in about 8:10 or so. Before we go to break, we do want to let you know there's an injury accident at County Road 4900 and County Road 3400 that just west of Liberty. So at the intersection of County Road 4900 and 3400, there is an injury accident that's just west of Liberty. A police, fire, and EMS are on scene. So if you can, find another route if you are in that area. Let them do their job and help clear that accident. All right, 7:55, 45 degrees. We'll be back with more on the Mighty 690 KGGF. 8:11, 46 degrees. We are back with our Green Sign-Up program brought to you by Green Acres, and we're joined by David and by Wendy, and fun things to talk about. I see the list, and I'm excited to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about herd sires. I'm super excited.
Yeah, actually, you know, it may sound like I'm joking, and I'm not, but I find this very interesting, and you know, so when James is gone and I actually get to learn things on Wednesdays, it's a fun thing.
Yeah. We always talk about something interesting.
Absolutely, we do.
Yeah.
So what's going on?
So at my place, it's calving season. And so we always want to be one step ahead, at least in our planning. And so it's time to also start thinking about buying a herd sire, or, you know, planning how we're going to get those females rebred after they have dropped their new babies. So what makes a good herd sire? That's what I wanted to cover first. And the easy answer is they've passed their breeding soundness exam. You know, as long as they're competent, then they can be a good herd sire, right? Well, we're going to get into that just a little bit more. But to explain what a breeding soundness exam is, it's an assessment of the likelihood of accomplishing pregnancy in an appropriate number of open, female, healthy, cycling females. Sorry, I said that word twice. Open, healthy, cycling females during a defined breeding season. So really, we're looking at the sire's structural soundness, their mobility, and athleticism in the pasture. And that's going to be for any species. They need to be athletic. And then we're also looking at their reproductive development, testicular size and health, semen quality, things like that. So this is something that vets will do. Any bull, any ram, any stallion that is going to be turned out with any females need to be breeding soundness examined by a vet and get that certification taken care of before each breeding season. So even if you have it done, you know, this spring and you're working with a bull and you've got spring cows, and then you have a fall calving herd as well, you need to have that bull checked each breeding season. So those are the things that make a good bowl, literally. But what really fits your operation? So knowing some of their pedigree information is important. And sometimes this will mean, you know, registration papers, so you have the names of their ancestors back for 5 generations or 7 generations. Or a complete set of their genetic values, which is going to possibly include their expected progeny differences and give a really good estimation of the progeny that they'll produce. Sometimes pedigree info just means that you know what sort of animals they're out of. It's a bit less formal. So, for instance, we're going to talk about color in cattle. So if you have purchasing a black bull, but you know his maternal grandsire was red, then there's a potential for that sire that you have purchased to throw red calves. And if your goal is to produce only black calves, then knowing that pedigree information would be important because you might get some colorful calves, which I think is always fun. But that's me. Something else that would be important, a couple of things. Eye appeal. Nobody wants an ugly herd sire in their herd. So just make sure they're decent to look at. You know, they're not hobbling around on 3 legs. They wouldn't be very athletic then. Just kidding. Attitude. Highly, highly important. Attitude. If you're working with these animals, like you go out and do chores every day, and they have a bad attitude, it poses a safety risk. So make for sure that the animals that you're going to be around or bringing onto your farm are going to be safe. I have a little note here about pets, because I hear a lot of people that they talk about how their herd sire likes to be rubbed on his head. And yeah, a lot of guys do. But don't do that, because then they will get aggressive, and whenever they get larger, they will headbutt, and it becomes a safety problem. So don't make your herd sire your pet.
You know, we have that same problem here at the station, you know.
Yes.
Okay, never mind.
So we've already talked a little bit about the pedigree information. So let's go on down here to goals. A lot of folks know exactly what they plan to do with their offspring. Once they hit the ground, they're going to grow them for 6 months or, you know, whatever your plan is. Most of the time, you have a rough estimation of what you plan to do. So knowing that estimation will help you determine which sire to select. So, for instance, if you're going to market your animals at weaning, so you're going to hit, they're going to, you know, come, they're going to be born, they're going to grow for a few months, and then you're going to sell them off at weaning, then your goals for your herd sire would be, you know, healthy birthing and then good growth through weaning. You don't necessarily need to think about maternal traits or carcass traits. You're worried about getting that calf to the next stage. Your end goal there is a high weaning weight. So that's what you're going to look for in your herd sires. If you're planning to keep the females out of what's being birthed, you know, replacement heifers, replacement ewes, replacement does, then you're going to focus a little bit more on maternal traits. So is that female going to be able to milk? Is she going to be a good mother? Those are all genetic. And so the bull passes on that tendency to his daughters. So make for sure that if you're planning to keep daughters, then you want them to be decent in your herd. A short-term goal, if you're using these herd sires on first-time mothers, then you're going to want to look at low birth weights and calving ease or birthing ease. I'm not very familiar, David, maybe you know, do they have EPDs and things like that for goats?
So they don't have EPDs for goats. There are some EPDs with sheep. It's kind of hit or miss on if producers use those or not. Some breeders with goats sort of keep track of unofficial EPDs. They're not EPDs because there's not a system for that in goats. But they will weigh their kids and have an ideal of what size kids a buck throws or that line of genetics throws. So some breeders, if you are looking for a new buck, you can kind of ask them those questions and they might be able to give you some info.
Excellent. So yeah, do your research. It's easy to do. So whenever you've got your goals laid out, then it's easier to match the herd sire to what you're trying to achieve. There are also in the cattle industry lots of information out on terminal traits. So if you're looking to retain steers and feed them out, maybe sell custom beef or whatever, then you'll want to look at some of those carcass qualities. You know, they'll have yield scores, they'll have ribeye size, all kinds of things that you would want to look at to get that animal to meet your goals. Money. Herd sires equals dollars. So whenever if you're shopping, make for sure that after you've got your goals planned out, you kind of know what money you have to work with. So if you're looking for a sire that's going to give you an exact offspring, you're looking for something specific, you want a proven sire, those are going to be quite a bit more expensive than a younger herd sire where there's going to be a bit more guesswork. They just don't have any offspring to prove themselves yet. So they're going to be a little bit more inexpensive. So know where your budget is. Herd sires, at least in the cattle market, the range for how much a good bull is all over the place. So just do your homework, work with a seed stock producer that you trust, or if you're going to the sale barn, make for sure that you know what you're buying. Make for sure. Because when you have a whole herd of cows, that cow produces one calf. But when you're pairing that animal with one bull for a whole herd, then that bull has high influence on those genetics. So lots of things to consider whenever you're talking about selecting a herd sire, but it's definitely worth considering because you don't want to just jump on something and then it be the wrong animal.
That could be something that really affects many years, almost a generation, if you do choose the wrong
absolutely
sire.
And probably more than one generation, because a lot of times if you go to the expense of purchasing a herd sire, and you'll want to use him more than one season. So you don't want to get into something that's only mediocre or something that's not going to fit your goals.
Especially if it's something that a sire that affects a lot of your budget, perhaps.
Yes.
And if that's wrong, then that could be trouble, couldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So this is something that, okay, I grew up on a farm, but good grief, you just don't think about stuff like this when you're just out, you know, out in the middle of a farm, you know, 13, 14 years old. At least I didn't anyway. Music was my thing. But it's something that you really do have to put a lot of time, a lot of effort, but a lot of thought into as well.
Yep, absolutely. And there's other ways to get your herd rebred after birthing, after calving season or whatever. Then, I mean, you can always lease bulls, work with a seed stock producer that has bulls for lease. You'll want to make for sure that those bulls conduct a breeding soundness exam after each leasing session they've had. So they'll also check for disease and things like that. So making for sure you've got a healthy bull. You can always use artificial insemination or embryo transfer. Some of those processes can actually pencil out better, be more economical, depending on your goals and your facilities. So if you have the ability to gather your stock daily for, you know, a week or whatever, and do some timed artificial insemination, then you can have a really tight birthing season and you don't have the expense of a herd sire. And then you don't have to worry about what to do with that herd sire in the off season. So there are other ways to get the job done.
Absolutely. And then of course, we're not just talking about cattle, but about different animals as well. I find that fascinating. You know, not only for cattle, but sheep, goats. Mm-hmm. I find that very fascinating, very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the same information for all species.
Very neat. Very neat. Yeah. All right. So now that I realize, okay, Chris, you got to learn a whole lot more. How can I learn more? How can I get a hold of you all anyway?
Yeah, I'm at the Altamont office, so they can call the Labette County Extension office. That phone number is 620-784-5337.
And I'm at the Independence office. That number is 620-331-2690.
And now there's classes and everything. And there's ways, there's opportunities to learn if somebody needs to, if somebody just realized, hey, I got to learn a whole lot more. There's ways to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always happy to visit with folks one-on-one, but also our producer meetings are very important, and you learn lots of different things and have the chance to network with other producers in the area as well.
What am I? I'm agriculturally challenged. No, that's not it.
Ag literacy. Maybe you're not very literate. I would hope not.
Right. That's a good point.
There is that. So, yeah, we've got our OCAN Cattle Conference coming up on Friday, and that's going to be a really good program. And then March 7th is Animal Health Day in Independence. So lots of chances for learning.
That's good news. And, of course, every Wednesday as well.
Yes.
Right here on KDGF. As always, we appreciate you both joining us every Wednesday. I know the schedule kind of rotates and things like that, but K-State is here every Wednesday. Yep. And if you want to learn every Wednesday, well, you know, I listen in from over there, right? I'm across the window, but I listen and learn every single Wednesday. So appreciate you both coming in this morning.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Absolutely. 8:24, 46 degrees. We will get, James is supposed to be back. James is probably laughing as he's driving back. But he will be here for Open Line here in just a few minutes. We'll get that started. And of course, I believe we have a visit. I had to look at the calendar. We have a visit from the Coffeyville Chamber of Commerce coming up at 9:10, but we'll have Open Line after that until 11 right here on the Mighty 690 KGGF.